Bodhidharma, Part 2. As he approached his 60s, he knew that his karmic connection with China had ripened. So he went to the king, who held non-Buddhist views, and told him, "Revere the Triple Treasure, and you will thrive and prosper in the blessings of the Buddha." "My karmic connections with China have ripened. When my work there is finished, I will return." The king, weeping like one in mourning, said, "What offenses has this our country committed? What is so felicitous about their land?" "Well, if you must go, you must. But once you have finished your work in China, please return to us quickly. Do not forget the land of your parents." The king himself saw Bodhidharma off, accompanying him to the very seashore. Bodhidharma sailed for 3 whole years, crossing the southern sea to arrive at Nankai on the south coast of China on the 21st day of the 9th lunar month in the year 527 Common Era, during the Lang Dynasty, the era name having changed from Futsu, the common way, to Daitsu, the great universal way, in the 3rd month. First, he had an audience with Emperor Bu of Lang, as the familiar story goes, which was what Hanyatara had alluded to when he said, "Do not abide in the south." He went north to the kingdom of Wei. It is said that he floated there on a reed. Literal-minded people fancy that this refers to a reed stalk and portray him as floating on a reed shaft, which is inaccurate. A reed is what a small passenger boat was called because of its shape. It was not an actual reed. In Hanyatara's verse, encountering a sheep refers to Emperor Bu of Lang, and crossing the river in darkness refers to Bodhidharma's crossing of the Yangtze River, which separates the two kingdoms. In this way, he quickly reached Shorinji on Mount Su, where he stayed in the monastery's east gallery. No one could fathom what he was doing because he sat cross-legged throughout the day. As a consequence, they called him the Brahmin who contemplates the wall. Thus he passed 9 years without ever preaching in a harsh or critical manner, and without being quick to point things out. After the 9 years, he handed down his skin, flesh, bones, and marrow, respectively, to his 4 disciples, Dofuku, Doiku, Soji, and Eka, for he knew their spiritual potential had already ripened. At that time, there were two heretical Buddhists named Bodeyushi, he who longs for enlightenment, and Vinaya Master Kozu, he of the lineage of light. Seeing Bodhidharma's religious virtue spreading through the country, and people everywhere paying their respects to him, they could not restrain their resentment. Not only did they throw stones at him and knock out his front teeth, but they also tried to poison him 5 times. When they proffered a poisonous drug for the 6th time, Bodhidharma spread it out upon a huge boulder, which immediately crumbled to pieces. When he saw that his spiritual mission had already been completed, he thought to himself, upon receiving the seal and the predictions from my former master, I saw a great spirit in China and knew for certain that there would be someone capable of receiving the teachings of Mahayana. However, following my encounter with Emperor Bu of Lang, occasions have not yet been suitable for winning people over. In vain have I sat in silence for only the noble one, that is Ekka, has realized the divine light, and to him I have passed on all that I have derived from the way. My work has now been disposed of, and my karmic connection completed. It is time to pass on. So saying, he sat erect and died. He was buried on Bear's Ear Peak. It is said he met Soen later on in the Onion Range, that is, the Bela Turg Mountains of Turkestan. However, he is actually buried on Bear's Ear Peak. This is correct. Just as Hanyatara had predicted, Bodhidharma became the first ancestor in China. At the time when he was still a prince, Bodhidharma had held forth upon the pearl. As a result of this, Hanyatara had asked him, amongst all things, which is without any characteristics? And he had answered, the non-arising is without characteristics. Truly, even though some say that it is void and tranquil, such a view is not free of characteristics, which is why he had said that the non-arising is without characteristics. Because of this, you should understand that it towers above all, like a steep cliff soaring into the sky. you should comprehend that it is clear and bright within the 100 grasses, and realize that nothing is other than it. However, everything, simply by its very nature, abides in its phenomenal state, and yet is not the non-arising, and is not, therefore, free of characteristics. When heaven and earth have not yet been separated, how can the sanctified and the ordinary possibly be differentiated? At this stage, nothing will give rise to anything. Not a speck of dirt will be able to stain or soil anything. This does not mean that originally there was nothing at all. It is truly vast and clear like the sky, wondrously alert and resplendent. Because it is beyond comparison and is never accompanied by anything, it is the very maximum. This is why they say that the great is called unimaginable, and the unimaginable is called the Dharma nature. Not even the priceless pearl could compare with it. Not even the clear light of the mind resembles it. This is why Bodhidharma said of the pearl, "It has a worldly luster, so it still falls short of being considered supreme." The luster of enlightened wisdom is supreme. This is how he divined it. What he said truly arose from his inherent intelligence. Nevertheless, he sat in meditation for 7 days whilst being instructed in the marvelous principles of seated meditation, and gave rise to the wisdom of the unsurpassed way. You should know that, after you have found a thorough understanding of this and completely made real such a state, you will know that which the Buddhas and ancestors were talking about, and, having gained a clear understanding of that which the Buddhas of the past have already borne witness to, you will be a direct descendant of the Buddhas and ancestors, a fact that the Venerable Bodhidharma in particular exemplifies. Although he was like one who already had naturally enlightened wisdom, he also gave rise to the wisdom of the unsurpassed way. Still later, he trained thoroughly in meditation and probed deeply into what efforts he should make to preserve and maintain it in the future. For 40 years, he served his master Hanyatara, scrupulously performing his duties without forgetting Hanyatara's predictions for his future. Having lived 60 years, he spent 3 whole years of winters and summers upon the billows of the vast sea, until at last he reached a foreign land. Then, during his 9 years of sitting in silent meditation, he found a great vessel for the teaching, and for the first time propagated the true law of the Tathagata in China, as well as disseminated the great blessings of his former teacher. His hardships were more severe than those of any other. His austerities were greater than those of any other. Our times are decadent and frivolous, and people's abilities are mediocre. So many trainees today, as might be expected, desire easy attainments. Those of this ilk who lay claim to what they have not yet found must be companions to those conceited braggarts on Vulture Peak who thought their spiritual prowess was sufficiently so advanced that they did not need to stay to hear the whole of the Buddha's teaching. If you meditate carefully and probe deeply into what is happening in the previous story, your understanding of these lofty matters will continue to increase. If you wear your brains out and discard your body by training with a good will, you will have the subtle fragrance of the Buddhas and directly match what was apprehended by the Buddhas and ancestors. Do not think that some bit of wisdom or a partial comprehension is sufficient. Again, here are my humble words. Do you wish to hear them? There is no location, boundary, or surface. So how can anything even as minute as autumn down possibly exist?